The opinions and views expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of Midwest Family Springfield, its management, or its advertisers.
You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
This is The Noblest Motive.
Wow, Rodri got a straight red. Rodri got a straight red and Nottingham Forest is still losing to City 2-0.
I don't care. I don't know what's happening.
It's soccer, babe.
I know it's soccer. I know it's football, but I don't know what's happening with it.
We'll get you reacquainted.
I know.
Find you a kit. Call them kits, not jerseys.
No, I know. And you know why I'm not into it anymore? Because Ted Lasso's over. How sad is that? I'm such a marketing and entertainment whore.
I'm really glad that Ted Lasso got people into soccer.
Yeah, it did.
But I'm also really glad that, like any good European program, they decided to end it at a reasonable time. Because there's nothing worse than a program that stretches 25 seasons and it stopped being good after the 11th.
That is true. Like jumping the shark you're talking about.
I feel like sometimes programs, they don't know when to stop. Have you ever heard that term?
Jumping the shark?
I have.
Okay.
Because it's in reference to the wonderful episode with Fonzie.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. I just found that out a couple of maybe months ago.
I love Happy Days.
Yeah. Happy Days reference. I didn't know that. I just thought it was a term.
It was funny because I remember that episode and I remember thinking, like, this is outlandish. We were in Mrs. C's living room for most of this series, and now, like, Fonzie's wearing a leather jacket jumping a deadly shark container. How did we get here?
It's so true. It's so true, man. Happy Days turned... how many seasons was that? Do you know?
One of those that needed to end
earlier. You're right, exactly. That's the right answer. Man, Noblest Motive, Episode 2. This is fantastic, Trent.
It is absolutely brilliant. The Noblest Motive, and what we get up to here is talking about the most pressing topics of what's going on around Springfield, but also the greatest state in the world, Rock.
Everybody has issues with mental health, and that's the big thing that I think coming up for me, I have come to understand. I mean, people have really healthy ways to cope and people have really great ways to, you know, get through it, some more than others. And there are obviously different levels of mental health and tons of different reasons and causes for it. I mean, what would you say within the last 20 years has gotten like stage time?
Sure. Things keep accelerating across our society and the awareness of mental health, certainly in the last 20 years, but I would be confident to say the last 10 to 12 years, since the beginning of the aughts, as they often call
the aughts. What are your origins like when mental health started to be a thing that clouded your life? Because when we're kids, I mean, unless it's chemical, unless it's that early on, when we're kids, I feel like it's just not even a thought, you know?
Well, you don't have any reference to other things. So even if you are feeling sad, there's oftentimes, unless it's the hyperlocal reference, like for example, I was a sadder child to some degree at points because I missed hanging out with both of my parents at the same time. But that's almost a referential type thing as well, because you see other people hanging around with their parents all the time. And that's not something that you have access to. But you have access to other things that other children don't have access to. So, but the grass is always greener. There's always this desire for that which you don't have.
Right. I didn't have that. That's the thing with me. 2010 is when I started getting like physical panic attacks.
The aughts.
It was wild. And I searched for years for this thing. It's frustrating to me still to this day.
Well, our trauma, you know, so often we think of a specific incidence or incidents that might be the beginning of it. But so often it can just be the compiling factors of a life.
Do you have panic attacks or no? Because I have physical panic attacks that we've talked about. Yeah. Like I sweat, I get like, you know, physically, like I have fight or flight. And I've learned to sit through that for a long time.
So I'll do this thing, and it runs in my family to some degree, on the one side of my family.
Where you just shout!
Well, I do know how to shout. That's the other side of my family that knows how to shout. No, if I'm not in a good mood, like if I'm in a really bad mood, yeah, like something to do with my thoughts,
yeah,
I will, as has been termed by several past girlfriends of mine,
I will just
fast forward. I will just like go to bed. I can like put myself to sleep,
yeah,
and wake up the next day.
That's such an interesting thing. Fast forward. We've talked about that before. Yeah. Just yeah, fast forward time.
Just fast forward. It'll be better tomorrow.
Yeah. Maybe it will be better tomorrow when I'm going to bed at like 2 in the afternoon. It's so true.
I got like 19 hours of sleep and I feel much better now.
Oh man. Yeah. It's a wild thing.
Noblest motive. Rocky and Tran here talking about mental health, how we each have processed mental health over our lives. Sometimes our anxiety and our trauma can rise from the simple points of living.
Yeah, that's something that I've learned through therapy is there doesn't have to be a massive trauma for people to have anxiety. But the question that I have is, why is it so much more prolific now than it was, you know, say in the 40s?
It's the same type of question that you might hear asked concerning, oh, why do you think there are more gay people or transgender people? There are not. There are just more people willing to say, I am sad, instead of drinking an 80 rack of Budweiser and abusing their family.
Right.
That's the difference. We are more transparent in our issues now,
which is paramount to being able to mitigate it.
Correct.
Now, one thing, like I take antidepressants and I take anti-anxiety medication. I fought for years to do that, like probably 10 years. I would sit through having horrible panic attacks, dinners with friends, dinners with families, haircuts, pretty much any environment where I felt like I couldn't get out of it. I would just have these horrible panic attacks. And it really like it started to feel like it was just erasing who I was, you know, and I was like staying in. I was trying to be an actor at the time and it completely shut that off. But for the longest time, I didn't want to take medication because I was like, I don't want to have to do this.
Right.
But it came to the point where I needed it. I look at the shelves at the pharmacy and I've been taking meds now for probably, 10 years, the same meds. I look at the pharmacy and the pills are just like pouring out of these boxes. I always wonder, is like that a problem? I mean, we are over prescribing people, I think.
We do over prescribe. We have, and this is not a new innovation.
Right.
There are stories about, you know, Mother's Little Helpers back in the day. We love to think that taking a medicine is the first and final step towards fixing the problem, right? You're sick and you take a medicine and you consider that the doctor is an idiot if you are not perfectly healed afterwards.
Right.
When in reality, you're sick for most likely a different reason.
Yeah.
So you need to take the medicine and then make an innovation to your life.
Right.
And that's going to prevent you from being sick and you're going to see the best results that way. And it's the same thing with mental health. The medicines are often only to allow for us to fix the problem easier.
Yeah.
But we don't look to fix the problem ourselves because the medicine is supposed to do that.
Right. Yeah.
And then we fall on this crutch of the medicine and then we ask ourselves, well, why am I still sick? I've been on this medicine that's supposed to help me for so long.
Yeah.
But we failed to help ourselves, or we failed to find a therapist or an individual who could sufficiently help us.
Right. Talking about suicide, I've never gone down that road. I've been in very dark places, but I've never gone down the road of I want to kill myself. I've thought, like, what would the world be like if I wasn't around? That's about as close to that thought that I've ever gotten, but I really cherish life. You know what I mean? It's to think that, you know, people get to that place where it's like they can't even deal with that is it's a scary thing. And it's something I feel like, you know, I don't want to slip into ever in my life, but I never thought I was going to have anxiety. So, you know, who's to say that it can't happen? It's definitely one of those anticipatory thoughts of mine.
Sure. I mean, I know people who have killed themselves. And yeah. So, you know, it's a topic that is fairly personal for me. But in reality, it should be fairly personal to us all. We're yeah. all living and life is difficult. And those feelings slip into more people's minds than perhaps we'll let on. And yeah. we have to stave them off by not only communicating to professionals when it's necessary, but communicating with one another, being transparent. When we ask how you're doing, don't say good if right. you're bad.
Right.
Don't feel as though you're going to be that burden by expressing yourself. Consider that perhaps we all need to use one another as a resource.
Yeah. And talking about that, you know, we've had some great conversations with a partner of ours here, Angela Cummings. She's the executive director of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the Illinois chapter. And she has amazing insights on suicide and everything really surrounding it. So I thought it would be really interesting just to take a moment and hear a couple of things that she talked about.
You know, sometimes you're doing every possible thing you can, and the mind is a very complex organ, and suicide is a very complex issue. And sometimes you're just doing every possible thing that you can, and we just don't want lost survivors to feel like they did something wrong. It's okay to ask someone directly if they're thinking about suicide. This is where I think people get really scared. And it turns out that that's a huge life saving step. It seems so dark and scary. Maybe they don't want to approach somebody about it, or they don't even want to let their own thinking go to that. Like, I right. can't even think about the fact that my loved one could be thinking about ending their life. So they just don't even talk about it. Talking about it actually is hugely helpful. You will never put the idea in someone's mind who didn't already have the idea. 3 out of 4 people surveyed think that there are definitely observable warning signs when someone is struggling with their mental health. And that really, again, that same 3 out of 4 people, even higher, like 78% of respondents thought that education and training could help people who are experiencing a mental health crisis to get out of that mental health crisis and avoid getting to the point where they might be feeling suicidal. We also know that suicide is an incredibly impulsive act.
Right.
And data has shown us, reports from attempt survivors have given us this data, that oftentimes a person who makes an attempt decides to do so in under 10 minutes. From feeling bad to, I think I'm going to go ahead and do this in under 10 minutes, oftentimes.
A lot of potent stuff here. I've learned so much from Angela about suicide, you know, and it's because you just talk about it. You sit there and you talk about it. People don't take the time to do that. And that's exactly what we need to do to lift the stigma about suicide and make people feel comfortable about being able to share their experiences with it. It's Rocky and Trent here, the Noblest Motive, having very, very important talks about mental health. So we talk about no one being free from, you know, mental health issues. Nobody gets to kind of check out from being able to deal with that. And talking about coping mechanisms, there are good coping mechanisms and there are bad coping mechanisms. And I think one important thing that people need to also throw into their life is therapy. People, obviously, in the past, they go to drugs, they go to drinking, they go to sex, those are probably your classic bad coping mechanisms.
Right. There are more.
Oh, tons.
A lot of people, some people yell, right? And other people get quiet.
Right.
Okay? You almost would prefer the bad coping mechanism of yelling.
Yeah.
Because at least then the person is getting out how they feel.
Right. Right.
The silent one is almost more dangerous.
Yeah.
Because you forget that person might be suffering.
Right.
And they are. Oftentimes. So we need to break down those barriers.
Yeah. And that's what it is with this, you know, with therapy and being able to talk about it. You know, therapy has been a big, big tool for me. And a lot of the times that my therapy, years ago was how to manage panic attacks naturally. And I tried that, and I have got a lot of tools in my tool bag to be able to do that. And just really sitting through it and knowing that it's going to be okay is the best tool that you have. But at the same time, it's painful to sit through it. You know what I mean? So it's easier to kind of go the way of drugs and all of that stuff.
Right.
Medication definitely helps, but you got to just know that there are resources. You know, there's this place, Gateway. We spoke to a woman, Mercedes, who works at Gateway. She's a clinician there. What I find interesting about her, as a lot of people over there, is that they've kind of been through these things themselves. It's important that, you know, I feel like my therapist is not a perfect person, that they also have issues.
We call that lived experience.
Yes.
Lived experience perhaps gives us a, whether consciously or subconsciously, a bit more confidence in the individual that we're speaking to, because we feel as though they understand us in a way that others who haven't experienced something, whether, you know, personally or through a family member, would be able to.
Yeah. Let's hear a couple of insights from her.
We've come a long way since I came into treatment about what substance use was, that it was a dirty, nasty thing, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And there was stigmatized populations, you know, 20 years ago when I started getting clean and sober, to where we are now, to where we have identified that it is, in fact, a brain disease. Fear is definitely a factor. And I think it comes in many forms, like you said, you know, fear of failure. What about also fear of success? You know, how is my life going to change if I do make these changes?
Yeah.
You know, what's my job going to say? What's my family going to say? You know, as people with substance use disorders, we think that sometimes we're so sneaky and that nobody knows. And, you know, well, if I go to treatment, then they'll all know, when it turns out we all knew anyway. It was really the only option that I had, because I just didn't want to die.
Yeah.
You know? When the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change, you will change.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, I felt very akin to, was that I just can't stay this way anymore. Something's got to be better than this. And desperation is a great motivator for a lot of people. Recovery is definitely possible. And there's always a starting point somewhere. But, you know, being able to take a leap of faith, or even just, like I said, a fact-finding mission, that it's possible. There are people there to help you, and you're not alone. You are not alone. There are plenty of people that have been in the same position, that have taken that step forward to make a phone call, to ask a friend, to ask a coworker, a colleague, and say, hey, I need help, right? There is no shame in asking for help.
We appreciate her insight here on The Noblest Motive, Rocky and Trent, talking about mental health.
Yeah.
It's super important. We've spoken about problems that all of us have to face to some degree. No one escapes, as Rocky so malevolently noted at the beginning of this.
Whoa. I wish I could malevolently note everything, Kim.
Well, do you really?
I don't know. I don't really know what that word means.
We'll go over that during the Latin episode of The Noblest Motive, all right?
I can't wait. No, but you know what? Honestly, there are so many resources, and there are so many things in our community here and around, and it's because we're talking about it. It's
Absolutely.
Because we feel more comfortable to talk about it. I remember, you know, my grandpa owned a bar of just all these, like, blue-collar, you know, Polacks in the you know, 50s, and they'd get drunk and they'd go talk about beating their wives, you know. Mm-hmm. What I mean?
Yeah.
And that isn't, well, it's probably, it definitely is happening.
It's happening less, we like to hope and
yeah.
think, and
yeah.
anyone who has that problem still happening in their lives is
reach
encouraged
out.
To reach
yeah.
out to family members, to community support, to institutions. Make sure that you are not in danger, and make sure that your loved ones are coping in healthy ways.
Yeah, which is hard to do, because talking about it and addressing it and not just going along with it is going to make things turbulent, because, you know, people who are going through something and coping want to just tend to stick with the easy option. But when people are in that place, it's hard to see any other choice. So empathy from all sides, I think, is really important. You know, people who are going through some stuff, people who aren't at the time, and not just looking and judging. I think that's something that is going to be a big part of, you know, ending the stigma of mental health. you know, meaning you're this broken person, because it doesn't. And the quicker we can all get hip with that jive, the quicker that we'll be able to, you know, really, really help each other out. Well, this has been awesome. And you're going to be able to hear more from Angela Cummings, Mercedes from Gateway this coming month on our Noblest Motive page.
Noblest interviews, baby.
Baby. And we love you for listening. And please continue to spread the light and make this place better than we left it.
Don't forget to subscribe.
Oh, man.
Okay?
Here's the big ask.
Don't forget to hang out with us. We get lonely, you see. Come and spend some time with us.
What does that mean? Where?
Oh, well, anywhere you could find podcasts.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
This is the Noblest Motive. Find the Noblest Motive on your favorite podcasting platforms. For topic ideas and questions, email podcast@wmay.com. The Noblest Motive is a production of Midwest Family Springfield.